together. If we bring a little joy into your humdrum lives, it makes us feel as though our hard work ain't been in vain for nothing. Bless you all!
Welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. I am Jim, and with me is a man whose commitment to Sparkle Motion has never been called into question. Teal, how's it going, pal?
Good. I'm doing good. I, it's the holiday season, and Sparkle Motion is getting me through the doldrums.
Great. Plenty of rehearsal time.
Plenty of rehearsal time. Yep. So,
listen, before we get started, I wanted to address some viewer mail.
Oh, wait, we have viewers? You mean listeners?
Listeners, viewers, I don't know. Okay, well, we'll fix that in post. Yes, listener mail. We do have some fans out there in our early adopter plan, and we get a message from Zach, one of our new early subscribers, members, I don't know what we call them, but he had a question, and it was in regards to plans, I guess, to make a movie, I don't know, live action, animated, or whatever, of the Monster Cereal. And here is my response. Zach, have you listened to the program?
I don't even understand. Wait, Monster Cereal... Like Count Chocula, like a Count Chocula movie? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, they're doing a movie based on the Monster Cereals.
Well, who cares?
Well, apparently Zach is excited about it and wanted to know what we thought. And again, I say, have you listened to the show? Do you think that Teal has ever eaten a Monster Cereal in his life? Do you think his mom, who would not let him watch Christmas specials or TV in her Victorian Wonderland, was going to let him eat sugary cereals from General Mills?
No.
I don't think so.
I mean, Count Chocula is the only one I can think of. There's more than that? We've wasted enough time on this.
No, stop it. Listen, I am.
I refused. Go ahead.
You stop. Stop right there, all right? Because I understand that you had this childhood that, you know, that very few people would ever wish for. But I, of course, grew up in the land of sugary cereals. And yes, I did eat all the Monster cereals when I was a youngster, when the Monster cereals weren't just an annual tradition. They were on the shelves year-round. And I remember actually eating the Fruit Brute, which is sort of the long-lost monster. And any film that would dare to origin these characters better include Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy. Otherwise, it's going to reek of falsehood.
Well, have you looked it up?
Come on now. Look it. I'm addressing here, but what do I need?
Can we have Zach on the program to talk about this?
If he really wants to come on the program and talk about his love of the Monster Cereal, I mean, first of all, I think Zach's a bit younger than myself. So what is his connection to these monsters? Because I guarantee you he didn't grow up in the time when they were around all the time. But I, quite honestly, they've already done the cereal thing. And it was in the early 90s. It was called The Road to Wellville.
Exactly.
And it was all about Kellogg. And, you know, that's a pretty good movie.
Was that Alan Parker directed that, right?
Alan Parker directed it. You are correct, my friend.
All right.
Yeah, so I like that. Now I'm thinking to myself, what else can they do? You know, if the origin story of these monsters doesn't start in Battle Creek, Michigan,
but this
then
is
again,
just, this is just going to be some like CGI fest, like that emoji movie, right?
I don't know. I mean, that's the, so here's the thing, right? Can it be any worse than the Emoji Movie? Could it be any worse than the Angry Birds movie? I don't know.
Yes.
I think that Zach was looking for us to comment on possible plot lines, but I don't think we're going to do that on this program.
Wait, the movie's going to have a plot?
Well, you know, I don't know. Again, I didn't look it up. I mean, I knew it was happening, and then I just tried to bury it in my mind.
Yeah.
Just kind of like The Rock's version of Big Trouble in Little China. I know it's happening. I don't really want to know more than that.
Yeah, let's just leave that there.
We're starting the program on a false note.
We are.
To the show, people.
Okay, let's start the show now. Now that we've taken care of our listener mail, our rants and raves, our pet peeves, let's talk about something we've seen.
We can do that. Now, do you want to go and start this conversation?
I'll start
off,
this off, because okay, this is a film that you recommended to me.
I did.
Yeah. You said this is something worth checking out, and this is a movie called Sorry to Bother You. And it is a satire of capitalism, involves all sorts of contemporary issues in a comedic package. And it's an enjoyable movie. I mean, enjoyable is maybe the wrong word.
Well, I had a good time sitting on the couch watching it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really funny. It's got some really over-the-top humor. It's strange. It's full of energy and life and enthusiasm and anger. It's driven by some real anger towards the exploitation of capitalism. But it is a fun movie, and it there's something going on in this movie. I'm going to give away a little bit of it.
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe we should have talked about the.
Giving away the big thing.
Okay.
But I think anybody going into this movie already knows about White Voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that even if people didn't, I think that's a hook that you could talk about.
Exactly.
With
so
film.
That so that's the hook I'm giving away is it's about this young African-American guy who gets a job telemarketing and can't make a sale. And in a nice little cameo by Danny Glover, as another telemarketer leans over and says, "Hey, dude, you got to use your white voice when you're talking on the phone trying to sell stuff." And so he starts talking in his quote unquote white voice, which is actually the voice of a white actor dubbed onto him. David Cross, I think.
Yes, David Cross plays the white voice. The character is Cassius Green, and he's played by Lakeith Stanfield. And one of the things I think we should point out that the film is a fantasy, and I would say it's not necessarily set in the future, but maybe an alternate present.
I think it's set in an alternate present, exactly.
But it's hard to pick that out because there's so much of it rings true to what's happening in America today.
Well, and not just in – I started thinking – and this is, again, not giving something away because it happens really early in the movie, but there's this thing called Worry Free where you can sign a lifetime work contract and go live in a dormitory and work in a factory 14 hours a day and have all your needs taken care of. But you're basically an indentured servant. It's not even, I mean, is it slavery? Anyhow.
Well, I think that's one of the things that the director, Boots Riley, is kind of making a comparison.
Exactly.
Is that there are nations that such an agreement kind of takes place.
Is this worry-free thing is essentially a Foxconn factory in China. It's not even over the top, right? It's actually happening in our world today. It's not happening in America yet, but it's happening all over the world. And so that's something that's satirical in an American context. There's one more thing that I kind of want to give away about this movie.
Okay.
But I'm...
Oh, no. Listen, let me take over for a minute. I think there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie. And when we talk about enjoyment, I wanted to see this when it was in the theater, but you know, I live in a place where there is not a lot of choices. And they certainly don't get films like this. So I missed it, but it came on demand. It was actually on Hulu, and I for the moment, we have Hulu because we're trying to watch a few shows that we haven't gotten to yet. And we still haven't gotten to them, even though we've now had Hulu for a couple of months. But when this was on, I knew that my wife really wanted to watch it too. And I knew very little about the film. I did know that it was a satire, as you mentioned. I did know that it was, this telemarketing, and I knew something about this white voice.
See, that's more than I knew.
Which is even great, because that's why I wanted you to see it right away, is that the less you know about a movie like this, the more gifts it's going to offer you.
Absolutely.
Here's why I was entertained. I feel that in today's movie-going world, you know, we get a lot of action. We get a lot of CGI. We get a lot of stuff that is thrown at you for a big screen experience, all the noises and stuff, and the superheroes and whatnot.
Spectacle.
But you start to think that there are movies aren't just few and far between that actually are trying to say something that excites you in a different way. And so I sat back so entertained that here's this guy, Boots Riley. I don't know what it took him, how long he's wanted to make a movie like this or make any movie.
Apparently it took him years to make this movie. He had the script for a long time, and it took him a really long time to get it together.
And it feels, what is exciting is that you feel that there's a filmmaker now that has a voice. He has something to say. It's kind of a messy movie. Maybe it's trying to do too much for the budget.
The script might be a little messy. The filmmaking I thought was great, actually.
Well, but so that's what's so exciting is that what you feel is we're watching somebody that says, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to make another movie again, so yes, I'm going to blow it all on this film. I'm going to make it, and I don't care if somebody thinks it's controversial or whatever, but I'm making this movie. And that was really thrilling to sit back and watch this story unfold and get over the top.
And it does what the best satires do, which is it just keeps pushing its concept. It keeps raising the stakes on its concept. It keeps getting more absurd and more over the top until it kind of turns in on itself. There's something really predictable about this movie. And I realized this about halfway through watching it. And it's not necessarily criticism, but it is a really typical rags-to-riches story. And that's part of its satire, is to examine that narrative. But once you realize that that's what's going on, some of the surprises are gone.
Again, what's interesting is the story, and any story, when you watch something, you'll see familiar aspects from other films. Some of it may be intentional, and others, the director may not even realize. I know you're going to talk about one film in a second. And what's interesting is the film you're going to mention was mentioned to the director many times throughout his trying to get this film on screen. He refused to see it because he didn't want to be influenced. And maybe he encroached on ground that had been covered and not realized it. But I'll mention a different film that reinforces your point that there's not necessarily the rags to riches story. It isn't very... isn't so fresh and new in here is The Hudsucker Proxy.
Yes.
And it essentially is about corporate America, this time in the 50s, and the idea of a boardroom needing a dupe in order to regain control, but that the dupe somehow through luck or fortune or what have you ends up doing the opposite of what the corporation wanted.
Right. Ascending to a position of power and then doing the opposite of...
Yeah, and then getting drunk on that success and kind of losing for a time.
They lose their soul.
They lose their soul and the values that they held dear, which is the commentary on what corporations can do to you.
Exactly. It's the alienation of self, that's the fault of capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. And then you sell your soul, and then there's a chance at redemption, and the question is, can you ever really be redeemed for what you've lost in selling your soul? And some movies say yes, you can be redeemed, and other movies say you're irreparably damaged from this.
And now cue your film.
Okay, now cue my film. So okay, this is the first thing I'm watching Sorry to Bother You, and the white voice comes in. And I immediately thought of another film where a black actor was dubbed by in this case, the white director. And this film is called Putney Swope and is directed by Robert Downey Sr., Robert Downey Jr.'s dad. And it's also a satire. It's a satire of, I don't know. I mean, it starts off as a satire of capitalism and advertising. And then it sort of becomes a weird satire of black power movements in the 60s. And it becomes sort of a mess. But that, but it, this made me, sorry to bother you, made me immediately think of Putney Swope, which is, I would say, a time capsule that's worth watching if you're, you know, wanting to dig kind of deep. What's weird, though, is that in the 80s, every video store had a copy of Putney Swope. And it was often shelved in comedy and sometimes shelved in cult. But even in small video stores, for some reason, there was, I don't know what kind of distribution deal they had, but there was a copy of Putney Swope in like every video store, pre-Blockbuster.
Well, you know what? It's interesting is that I think this is why you and I, and it's probably, you know, our experience growing up at the dawn of video, and it's really its heyday in the 80s, these video stores, the big, big movie companies, they wouldn't necessarily play ball with the local video store, and they didn't offer them, you know, super deals.
Right.
But I think a lot of these weird independent movie companies saw another opportunity to make a quick buck.
Exactly.
And these video stores were just hungry for content. So a lot of these cult movies suddenly started showing up on shelves, things that people had never seen for years.
Yeah. Well, nobody saw Putney Swope when it came out, except, well, it got a little bit of press because Jane Fonda mentioned it on The Tonight Show.
That is correct. Actually, that's how it started getting booked into theaters.
Yeah. But it's a cult film, and it's a little time capsule, and it's a very problematic film, I think.
Well, I don't, first of all, it is definitely a movie that you could not make today.
Yeah.
For a myriad reasons. But one of the key differences in Boots Riley's movie versus Robert Downey Sr.'s film, Putney Swope, is it's the decision to dub the actor's voice
right
with a white. Now, in Sorry to Bother You, it's done very much intentionally.
As a commentary.
And it's on a commentary that the idea that you can sell easier if you're sounding stereotypically white. He's making a satire comedy on the idea that rich white people want to buy things from
right.
rich sounding white people. But in Putney Swope, what's very controversial is that the story is that Robert Downey Sr. He said that the actor Arnold Johnson, who played Putney,
couldn't remember his lines.
And that he was just terrible. And that one point he was very worried about it. And the cameraman said, you know, don't worry about it. I can see the lips moving pretty well. So we could just dub in the voice afterwards. But I don't fully buy it. I don't buy it because the way that the voice is put in there, it feels almost like someone's doing a bad characterization on purpose.
Yes.
Of a black man's voice.
Yes. Because it is not Robert Downey Sr.'s actual voice. He's doing this kind of growl.
Yeah. And why? I mean, I know that, you know, he might have had to pay the actor more money,
right.
I guess, to redub his lines. But that's where it's false for me. It seems like, well, was the actor not available through the whole film? There's something going on.
There's something going on there. And it makes for a very strange... I mean, the film is strange in so many ways, but that really adds to it. One other thing I wanted to say is a few movies that Sorry to Bother You reminded me of. And and you mentioned Hudsucker Proxy. Some of these movies are just, they made me think of it just because they're satires. And satire is really hard to do, and there aren't that many good ones. But this made me think of the movie Okja, which came out on Netflix last year.
Yeah, I also, when I was watching it, I felt an Okja connection.
Yeah. Okja also takes place in kind of an alternate present where capitalism has run amok, and there's some similarities in sort of the style and the tone being over the top. I think another movie that it made me think of was Bob Roberts, satire about politics. Of course, if we're talking about satire, we got to talk about Network.
You're always going to try to slip in that Network.
I'm always going to slip in Network. Another one it made me think of is CSA, Confederate States of America, which is a fake documentary about America in the present as though the South won the Civil War.
That sounds horrifying.
It is, but it's a comedy.
Oh, I've never seen that. I have.
Oh, you got to see it,
Bob Roberts. And I thought about Bob Roberts.
Yeah, and it's CSA is hilarious because it's the documentary, but then it's like interrupted by commercials for slaves.
Oh, jeez. When did that come out? And who?
Oh, jeez. It came out sometime in the last decade or so, maybe a little longer than that.
Who made it?
I can't remember the guy's name. I clearly did not do my homework for this.
Well, you know, look, basically, the movie, sorry to bother you.
It came out in 2004.
Okay. But sorry to bother you is a comedy. It's a drama. It's a fantasy. It's a satire.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff, and it's certainly not, I think, for everyone's tastes, but it's something that you should take a look at, and certainly is something different than you're going to get every day of the week.
I would recommend it to a lot of people. I think we need more of this kind of movie that engages the audience in things that might be uncomfortable, but does it with humor and with passion. And this is the kind of movie that'll make you think a little bit while you're laughing.
Well, great. Super recommendation there. So one thing, and you know, there's been a few weeks that I've been in mourning the loss of Filmstruck.
Oh, yeah.
But on the last couple of days, I went on my own personal mini binge to get as many movies watched as possible. Sometimes I was in the middle of something and I'll get back to it. I have plenty of time. And then suddenly time ran out. And, you know, in the last few days, it was kind of a flurry of seeing some great stuff, some interesting stuff. And it also just reminded me of the sadness that such a great resource only had for only 5 or 6 months. And now it's gone. But I took the last day as an opportunity to catch up on a movie that I had never seen in all my years. Yeah. And that was Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo.
Ah, yes. Great film.
And then I followed that up with the sequel, which now for so many weeks the name's escaping me, of the sequel to that. But I guess the reason why I watched both back to back is I was so blown away by this sheer amazing filmmaking.
Yeah.
The cinematography alone, when we talked several weeks back about
Sanjuro.
Sanjuro, yeah, thank you. These were the inspirations for the Clint Eastwood Fistful of Dollars movies, The Man with No Name. As a matter of fact, it was such an inspiration that Sergio Leone just ripped off the movie and didn't credit Kurosawa and then got sued successfully for it. But when I was griping about...
There's a little Star Wars influence in these?
Yes, mostly The Hidden Fortress.
Hidden Fortress, yeah.
But well, I guess here it's time to have some full confession.
Yeah.
While I'm never shy to say that, you know, I haven't seen a movie, and Filmstruck was a great opportunity for me to go back and see some films that I should have seen, like these two Kurosawa films.
Right.
The fact remained that I've gone all of my years without seeing any Kurosawa films until then.
No Kurosawa films at all.
Right. Those are my first two Kurosawa films. And again, I say that because I think times there are people don't want to admit that they haven't seen some classic movie that everybody says, oh, you should see. And it got us thinking about movies that we should have seen.
There's a couple of classic movies I haven't seen.
Well, I want to hear about those in 1 second, because we have a listener. No, I didn't say viewer. I said listener. Tony from L.A., he confessed to me that a movie that's from his childhood, and he loves the director and has seen all his works, he has not, for whatever reason, seen this film, and is so ashamed of it that he just tells people he's seen it when it comes up in conversation because it's too embarrassing. And this one blew me away. He has never seen John Carpenter's Halloween.
Wow.
This is a guy, by the way,
who's a Carpenter fan.
He's a Carpenter fan, and he saw Star Wars 64 times in the theater when it came out. So he sees Star Wars 64 times, is a fan of Carpenter, but he's never seen Halloween, and now he has to go around lying to people.
So why doesn't he just watch it?
I don't know. That is a question. I don't know.
Okay, because I have a few like that on my list that I just don't get around to it.
Well, I want to know what those titles so I can shame you.
Okay, I'll start with a classic that probably a lot of people haven't seen anymore, but Singing in the Rain.
What?
Never
seen.
That's
insane.
Never seen Singing in the Rain.
I guarantee you that would be your mom-approved film.
Oh, I know. It's one of those things, like, I just didn't see it and then haven't seen it.
I've taken my oldest to see it in the theater. And also, we had different paths of school. My freshman year, I was in school in California before transferring to school in New York. And there was like an intro film class there. And that class, for years, the professor, the very first film he shows the film students is Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen scenes from it and stuff. I think we probably played it in the video store. I don't really remember. No, I've never seen it. Oh, yeah.
I mean, the very first time, I was like you. Whenever it was on when I was a kid, it would probably be on somewhere at my grandmother's house. There'd be scenes that I'd catch. And I have to confess, I was like, I don't know. But when I was about 11 or 12, it came to a revival house in Cambridge, and my dad took my sister and I to see that, and it was double featured with The Wizard of Oz,
okay,
which I had never seen in the theater, only saw it on TV. And when you watch it from beginning to end, I mean, it is such a great movie. So you've got to see it. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take you, but you have to see that movie. I think your kids would enjoy it.
Well, that's the thing. It moves up on the list because my kids will want to see it. Some of these I don't, not going to show the kids The Pianist, which I've never seen.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
That's a good movie, too.
Okay.
But I mean, that I can see where you've skipped it, and there's people that won't see it now because it's directed by Roman Polanski.
Right.
And it's not an easy film to watch, for sure.
Exactly, yeah. Okay.
It's not a movie you watch multiple times.
Here's another one, though. Here's another one I haven't seen. And this is one, I've never lied about it, but I've definitely kind of just change the subject. I've read the book, so I can kind of get away with it. Right? To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, man, you are pulling out the doozies. I can't believe, how do you get out of school? Everybody reads that book in school, and then they pair it up by showing you the movie, and it's available. You can watch it on, like, Netflix or Amazon Prime or something.
Oh, it's... I have no trouble finding the movie. I've just never seen it.
It's really... Well, it's funny because you do like another film that director years later made. It's the one with the Man in the Moon or whatever, the one with Reese Witherspoon.
Yes, Robert Mulligan.
Yeah, and you've got to see this movie. I mean, you're really blowing my mind because I was expecting, like, my list is lame compared to you. Like, I haven't seen The Bicycle Thieves.
You haven't?
No.
That's a pretty good...
It's no Singing in the Rain.
Okay, it's no Singing
it's
no in the Rain.
To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't know to kill a mockingbird. Like that.
But that's like an essential part of like someone's film education. That's like not having seen Unchained Andalou.
I have seen that. But I haven't seen, I told you I didn't see any other Kurosawa films, so I haven't seen Rashomon.
Right, okay. So you got the entire Kurosawa list. It's funny, after you said, told me you had watched that, Yojimbo. I thought, oh, maybe my kids will like it. And I turned it on. I just fast forwarded it a little bit. And I just landed on a scene with a dog walking through the street holding a severed hand.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's right at the beginning.
It's right at the beginning. And I just thought, yeah, I'm not going to show this to my 6-year-old right now.
No. No. You know, that we could go at length and talk about this film. But the reason why we're having this discussion now is, you know, well, because a film like when I saw this, it was almost like a game changer. Like I was enlightened. And through Filmstruck, I saw for the very first time Persona.
Oh, my God,
And when I watch it, because I have seen some, you know, Bergman movies, but not nearly enough. And so I pop that in. And, I mean, I walked away from watching this saying, whoa, this is a game. It's another game
changer. It's a game changer from a long time ago. And a lot of people have not caught up to it yet.
You know, so to completely go into just a discussion that you had several weeks ago, I worry that there are people out there whose filmographies may include a film like Interstellar, but not 2001, or some of these other movies, and that what they think is the gold standard is a film like that, which I have no problem with.
Right.
But
not the gold standard.
Well, if you like movies, you got to go back a little bit and see some of these classics. When I saw Persona, I now realized that it influenced like 40 different directors.
Yes.
And you know, and here's another confession. And again, I can't believe you haven't seen To Kill a Mockingbird, but I haven't seen any Rainer Werner Fassbender movies.
You've never seen a Fassbender movie?
No, okay. I haven't. But see, I thought that there was going to be that time
because there was tons of Fassbender on Filmstruck.
It was everything he had ever done.
Yeah.
So I figured, oh well, you know, I'm going to have lots of time to just dive into that.
Yeah. Well, I suggest starting with Berlin Alexanderplatz.
Yeah, that's the one that everybody jumps into. So I look at, and I know one of these. I'm not going to act pretend surprise, but I've got to hear it out of your own lips because I can't believe you didn't. Because you said you had a story of why I haven't.
Yeah, but I'm saving that. I got one or two more to go. No, I got one more before that.
This is so good.
I got another one.
Okay.
I got another one.
I'm not strapping a seatbelt on.
And this is a pretty recent film, and everyone went nuts over this movie, and I just haven't seen it. Boyhood.
Oh, you know, okay, I'm shaming you on that, and I'll tell you why. Because years before it came out, how I first heard that this was being made was from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had a way of telling me these things that just didn't sound real because there was very little press about the fact that on his side projects – this movie was getting made. It's a fantastic, as a matter of fact, one of my favorite films of the last 10 years. And I'll tell you the reason why. When I watched the film, there's something something magical about those monster cereals. Something magical that
happened
for me.
Is this that Harry Potter influence again?
Yeah, no. Somehow, this film was able to capture the experience of what it's like to have certain episodes as a child. And I had this very strange feeling when watching this film. It took me back to like various snippets of a moment of my own childhood. Sometimes how you might experience a traumatic event. How do you process when you're doing something that you feel like might be a little dangerous and you're trying to figure out social things. And so much of that brought me away from the movie I was watching and into my own experience that when it was all over, I said, boy, it is pretty rare when a movie can do that.
And I think a lot of people had that reaction to it.
Well, and I know some people thought, well, why should it get credit for being an experiment? Well, if the experiment works, but see, this experiment could have been a total failure.
It could have been, yeah.
And it wasn't. And how he was able to keep these actors, and what's so great is, in just these little episodes that are done over a series of 7 or 8 years, you get to watch not just actors age, which is something you just don't get to see in any movie, their characters evolve, and not just the kid, but the adults. in his life that they actually have growth in the way that somebody might have growth in an 8-year period.
So are you trying to tell me I should watch it?
You know what? I'm thinking you might want to take a gander at the film, you know, just considering you were so excited about it 10 years ago when they were first making it. So maybe give it a shot. Why not? Okay, so that's good. So this is going to be a therapy session of me trying to convince you to see these great movies you haven't seen. So give me another.
Okay, this is another recent one.
This has been like the most favorite segment that we've ever done for personally.
Here's another one, but this is kind of a throwaway, just another recent film, Slumdog Millionaire.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Yeah.
You know what? It's a weird one. I saw that in the theater and really walked away enjoying it. And I thought it was an off year for movies that year.
It was.
Nothing I really, really super liked. And so I didn't think that year I didn't have as many complaints that it won Best Picture. I think that my oldest son would probably really enjoy it. So maybe it's time to go back and watch it again. I haven't been compelled to watch it more than the first time. I don't know whether I'll like it a second time, but it was an award-winning movie, and I'm surprised you didn't see it.
And I didn't see it, yeah.
You might find it better than you thought.
I for some reason, I just don't have a great impression of it. Was there some backlash or something?
Well, I mean, I think anytime a movie, like, critics really like, but then audience embraces it, and then it wins Best Picture, immediately, the worst thing you can ever do as a movie
is win
the Academy Award for Best Picture. Because, I mean, for me, the fact that La La Land didn't win, it was a shock at the end because of the way things unfolded. And I personally really loved La La Land. It was my favorite film that year. But it was a godsend because now La La Land will safely be secured as a great movie.
As a classic,
Had it won, all I would be hearing for people for years to come is, La La Land sucked. It should never have won Best Picture. Now we can say that for Moonlight, which I thought was okay, but it just didn't rock my world.
Yeah, I never saw it.
Of course you didn't. Apparently you haven't seen anything. It's a show about stuff we've seen or Teal may have seen, but probably hasn't.
Moonlight was next on my list.
Yeah, I think you should see it. It's funny, my wife hadn't seen it, and we started watching it on Amazon.
Yeah.
And we got through the first segment. She really liked it. And then we just never got back to it. So she still has two segments to go.
Okay.
It's worth seeing for sure.
Okay. So this other movie, the next one I'm going to talk about, I read the book.
Of course you have. I know where it's coming. So I'm imagining you'd read it.
I read the book. I loved the book. I was excited about the movie. It was out in theaters, I think, the month my daughter was born. So I missed it in theaters. I really wanted to see it. Missed it in theaters. So when it came out on DVD, I ordered it from Netflix.
Okay.
And was very excited to get it. Had some friends over to watch it. The movie is No Country for Old Men.
I just can't believe you haven't seen that movie.
And we sat down to watch it. Got about 10 minutes in, and my Xbox died.
Oh, and that's what you play.
And that's what I was playing my DVDs on, was my Xbox at the time. And I don't know if you remember this about Xbox 360s, but they had this manufacturing defect.
I never had one, so I don't know.
And so basically it did this thing called Red Ring of Death, and it did that, right? And then I that was it. Couldn't watch the movie. And so I just never got back around to it. There's a couple of Coen Brothers movies I haven't seen.
Oh, now I want to hear, because, you know, maybe it's a different show, but my impression of you was that you were not a big Coen Brothers fan.
I don't like movies because the Coen Brothers made them, but I like a lot of their movies. Some of their movies I absolutely love, and some of them I think are real misfires. And some of them, like Hudsucker Proxy, I love, even though everyone else seems to think it's one of their worst movies.
Well, it isn't, I'll tell you, because they have made some bland movies. I will just throw out, because I'm just wondering about some of the movies you haven't seen and you really should of theirs. Hudsucker Proxy, I rewatched when it was on Filmstruck, and I always have a little problem with the last third of the film.
I can see that, yeah.
It kind of goes down. But, I mean, watching it again, and now that you have a whole sort of filmography of the Coen brothers to pour through,
yes,
it really, you really appreciate the dialogue. I mean, these two, the
that's
way
what
that
I
they
loved
can
about
write,
it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's really good. So I enjoyed it probably the most out of any time I've ever seen it was the last time I watched it.
So another one that I haven't seen that I really want to see and is supposed to be great is Inside Llewelyn Davis.
It's one of their best movies that they've ever done.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people, it's probably hard for so many people to get through, but the Coen brothers, sometimes you can't distinguish their style other than the fact that they are very meticulous.
Yes.
And they are just, they just have a great look about their movies. And from the cinematography, performances, and just the structure of the movie.
Okay, so we're going to have to do a whole episode on the Coen brothers then.
We will, but you've got to see that.
Oh, yeah. No,
have you seen A Serious Man?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because, you know, I feel like some movies that show them doing really great things is A Serious Man, Inside Llewelyn Davis, No Country for Old Men, Fargo, and then, you know, it's really tough to talk about this movie because it became such a cult favorite.
Right.
Is The Big Lebowski.
Right.
Because I was a Big Lebowski early adopter.
So was I.
I was an early adopter, early Lebowski achiever, and the last thing I ever expected was it to become this cult phenomenon.
I had no idea. Yeah, I saw it in its opening week, and I actually think I saw it because you pushed me to.
Oh, hey, all right.
Yeah.
I saw it the opening weekend, and I was...
And I saw it a few days later because you pushed me to because... It's about a time and a place that we both lived in.
Yes, that's all right. We won't go any further in there, but that's what it did. It felt like the early. We were there, man.
We were there. We were at Ralph's.
Yes, I feel like those days were the days where you might actually have strolled into Ralph's at midnight and literally had maybe about 50 cents to spend on something.
Those were the days. Yep, those were actually the days. Yes.
All right, well, so No Country for Old Men, you got to see.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you haven't seen?
No, I went down my list. I'm sure there's plenty of other stuff I haven't seen, but these are the ones I dug up. That seemed like they would, you know, sure, maybe I haven't seen, like, the last two Die Hard movies, but... Those,
no,
I'm
no,
not
no, no.
Those
don't count. I'm talking about the ones I can shame you for.
Exactly.
Like
that's what I was. No,
and Singing in the Rain.
No Country for Old Men. To Kill a Mockingbird really is shameful. Oh, here's another one that I had not seen that I just saw a couple of months ago. And it's like one of the highest critic rated movies in history. 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yeah, I think you just told me that. That's another shocker. Because when I was getting my MBA, we actually had to watch that for a class.
Okay. Yeah. Everybody loves it. It's a classic.
I don't know if I love it, but it is a classic.
It is a classic. And yeah, I had problems with it after, you know, all the hype.
I have never seen Birth of a Nation.
That's probably a good thing.
Exactly. I've seen the scenes, right? But I felt that there's not a burning need to go see that film.
No, it's like I don't really think anyone needs to watch Triumph of the Will.
Right. And I haven't seen more than just scenes of that either.
Yeah.
More recent films that have been critically acclaimed that I haven't seen, just for one reason or another, but I hear about it all the time. 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Yep, I've not seen that.
Hunger.
Yes.
Steve McQueen. I haven't seen that. And then here's one where it makes all these best of lists, but I am not a fan of anime. Spirited Away.
You've never seen Spirited Away?
No. Haven't.
Have you seen other Miyazaki movies?
Haven't.
Wait, you've never seen a Miyazaki movie?
I have not.
Okay, well, I think you should be ashamed.
Well, I'm feeling the shame. It's maybe not the Singing in the Rain type of shame.
No, but you got to see at least one Miyazaki movie.
Like I said, you know, it's on my list because I haven't seen it, and I intend to at some point.
These are some of these are fairly obscure, though.
Well, like I said, you had mentioned when we were going to talk about doing something like this, like these AFI top 100 lists.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I went through the first AFI top 100 list from the one they did in 98.
Yeah.
And I had only not seen Birth of a Nation.
Okay.
And then the second, you know, had been revised. There was a couple of obscure silent type movies.
Right.
I had to see, like, I've seen parts of, but like Sunrise and right. Reed. But I mean, you know, I have seen all the greats.
Yeah. No, when I went through that list, To Kill a Mockingbird and Singing in the Rain were the only ones.
You know, I mean, again, to me, nothing beats our friend Tony and not seeing Halloween. That, of course, I wish I had more films like that, that like I was ashamed to admit that I haven't seen. It'd be kind of like saying I haven't seen Titanic or something.
That would not be shameful.
Oh, stop. We're not going to get into, you know.
Well, this is something I'd be interested to hear from listeners, too.
Yes, all couple of dozen of them.
All couple of dozen. I want to know your shame.
Yes, feedback at jimandteal.com and tell us the movies that you're ashamed to admit, and we'll shame you on a future episode. Which, by the way, we're going to be wrapping up here in a minute.
Yeah.
And
oh,
this
yeah,
is
you
going
want, you
to,
had yeah. something you want to say. Yeah.
I always have something I want to say, interrupting you. We have. By the way, you may not hear this because we're going to be editing a lot of the mistakes, but we've been having some weird audio connection today, and every like 10 minutes one of us cuts out on the other one. So that's par for the course. We have classic audio problems, and of course then my attention gets pushed away.
Oh, it's totally
to
distracting. We forget what we're talking about. Yeah.
And not only that, I don't talk right into the mic, and so I'll probably be like hello.
Proximity effect.
Yeah. So this is going to be our last episode of the year, 2018. It's, you know, certainly wish we could have had even more, but it's also more than we thought we'd ever get out there. So that's great. And we'll be back as early as we can in 2019. And, you know, we're going to hope to have some guests, though that's going to be an audio nightmare, right?
At this point, yes, that'll be an audio nightmare.
But we get some fun things planned. By the way, I'm already starting to watch bits and pieces of some of the films for our upcoming stuff. So I'm well prepared.
Oh, good. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to, just a little tease. I've got four digits that I'm going to throw out there to you that I'm starting to watch now on Amazon.
Okay.
And 1492.
Oh, you're getting ready. You are prepping for an upcoming episode. Well, I'm going to be right there with the director's cut of Revenge.
Yeah, before we go, there's a couple of movies that we aren't going to get to really talk about in depth, but I have seen, and I'm just throwing out some quick recommendations. It's in theaters now. If you can find it, it might be an art theaters only, but I did catch Can You Ever Forgive Me, the film with Melissa McCarthy, and she's great in it, and her co-star, Richard E. Grant, it's probably the best role he's had since With Nail and I and How to Get Ahead in Advertising.
I've always really enjoyed him as an actor.
I do. I remember I'd look for performances, you know, films that he was in, because he was always so great in those 80s films.
He's the only good part of Hudson Hawk.
Hawkmeister! Yes, him and Sandra Bernhardt are the best part of that film. Which, you know, that's one of those movies where it was so bad, but you thought, well, maybe it'll be great in a cult way. And I recall seeing it a second time later that summer at the drive-in. And I proved my point. Nope, it was not good.
Nope, it was just
a horrible movie.
Not good.
Yeah, but we're not going to go there. But yeah, so Richard E. Grant, it's probably the role of the lifetime. He's most likely going to get nominated for Academy Award, and I think he should. So that was a film that was directed by A Diary of a Teenage Girl, I think was the name of the title. And I really liked that film. And so I don't know her name, but this woman director who directed that, she's got a very unique style and approach to filmmaking. And so that excited me, and people should see it. Another film that is now available on Amazon Prime, I believe, is First Reformed.
Yes.
I wanted to see that because it was supposed to mark a comeback of sorts for director
Paul Schrader.
Paul Schrader, and then a star vehicle for Ethan Hawke. And he's fantastic in it. And it's probably the best film that Schrader's ever made. And I really, really liked it. There's a lot to talk about in that film, and I'm highly recommending at least you, Teal.
I'll watch it and we'll talk about it in the new year.
Well, it's just, it remedies one of my biggest pet peeves in movies. And that is how today everybody loves to move that camera.
Oh, yeah.
I know the camera's moving all the time. They're
put it on sliders, put it on a steady cam. Just who cares about your framing?
Well, that and the worst thing is they're like, oh, well, Steadicam's pretty steady. So if we have to do just a still shot, we'll just use the Steadicam for it, even though you see everything shaking.
Yes.
We're not going to put that tripod. What the hell is that? Whereas
that'll take
film,
too long to set up. Just have the Steadicam guy stand over there.
This film is primarily no camera movement whatsoever. And it's all about framing. And when there is camera movement.
Who shot it?
That I don't know, because like I said, we weren't going to really talk about this.
Okay,
film.
Yeah, we'll talk about
he
it.
He hasn't shot a lot of things, because I did look it up, because it's beautiful looking, and it's shot in the Academy aspect ratio of 1:3:3, which on TVs it's 1:3:7, but you are forced to pay attention to what's happening on screen.
Right.
It was very exciting to watch a film like this, because then when the camera did move, it was very intentional, and you paid attention to it. And I sat back saying, why can't more movies learn from something that's going on here? Thank you, Paul Schrader.
Well, yeah, but it's taken Paul Schrader a long time to get to that point.
Yeah, he had to go through a movie that was written by Bret Easton Ellis and starring Lindsay Lohan to get to this movie.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. But then the third film, and I'm mentioning this because it's on Netflix and sort of has a weird history, and I have some issues with the way Netflix distributes or doesn't distribute movies that are supposed to be critically acclaimed, which is Roma.
Yeah.
It's Alfonso Cuarón's follow-up to Gravity, which is not really a follow-up, but it's his, you know,
next film.
The first movie he's made. And I know that, you know, you tried to get to it, but you've been busy, so hopefully you'll get to see it. It's a widescreen candy for the eyes film, and the bigger the screen you can watch it on, the better. It's playing in like a couple of places.
So is it qualifying for awards?
They released it a couple of weeks ago in theaters.
Okay.
Sort of begrudgingly, Netflix does all these weird things where they won't release box office numbers. They don't want people to know how well it didn't do in the theater, and they just are very resistant to that model of maybe putting
things out. They
have
their own model.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily, I mean, you know, I'm a guy who, like, my druthers would be to see Roma on a big screen.
Right.
And not on the small screen, but I really, really wanted to see it, so I watched it the premiere night on Friday. It's a film that is not going to be for everybody. It is it's a foreign language movie. It's got a lot going on. It doesn't have a lot of story or plot. It's more of a slice of life and memories. But it's definitely one of the more gorgeous films you're ever going to see. And there's definitely a lot to talk about. So, you know, while you're looking for things to watch this holiday season, you should watch that.
Great. I will be watching it.
Yep. And then, I'm not going to talk about that. Well, you know, because you don't like to talk about TV programs.
No. Nope.
But, you know, I did, just as a quick shout out, because they're binging things. They're not like, it's not a TV show. For those who like spy movies, and I'm thinking like, you know, Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy.
Oh, Little Drummer Girl.
Yeah. If you liked that movie with Gary Oldman, what's John Le Carré? This was a fantastic adaptation of The Little Drummer Girl, because they had like 6 hours to actually really minutely
Not like
detail.
The highly compressed Diane Keaton version.
Yeah, which I saw as on video as a kid, because, you know, again, the video store had 20 copies of movies, and that's all you had. So, and I didn't get it. I was too young to really enjoy it. But this, I really did like, got into the whole spy thing, because it was very meticulous. And sometimes that's a problem with long-form TV. They almost fill up too much time.
Right.
And now there's another show that I haven't mentioned to you at all that I've been watching because I wanted to kind of get several episodes in before I decided, is it as good as it seems to be? But now there's only a couple episodes left. My wife and I are totally addicted to it, is Escape at Dannemora.
I have not seen it.
Well, it's on Showtime, and you probably don't have Showtime.
Yeah, I don't have Showtime.
But, you know, it's absolutely the best thing that Ben Stiller's ever done. It's a shock that he's directed this. He's got such restraint. And while it's certainly, it's like a 7-part show. We just finished part 5 last night. It probably could have been 3 parts. And certainly you want to get to the escape part as fast as possible. You're glued to the minutiae of details that went into this whole escape that really happened. And it happened, you know, I don't live close to where this happened, but I don't live that far away either. So it all happened in 2015, shortly after I moved to this area.
Right.
And we were captivated for the weeks that the manhunt went on. So I was very interested in catching this story. And it is like the performances by Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro and Patricia Arquette are so good. And just things that take a long time to develop. Each hour you spend with this story is fascinating.
And okay, I'm looking for, I will check it
so
out.
It's so good.
Yep. Oh, even though it's a TV show. Even though it's a TV show.
Well, you know what? I mean, that's the thing. We talked about Sorry to Bother You. We're not getting enough of those types of movies anymore.
We need more of those kinds of movies.
A lot of these types of stories that used to be mainstream films, instead they're going the route of being on these streaming services and you get a 4 or 5 chapter thing. And, you know, instead of a filmmaker saying, I only have 1.5 to 2 hours to tell this story, I want to tell all the details and I'm going to tell it 6 or 7 hours. You know, it's just a different thing happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. So listen, gang, we appreciate all of you who have started to listen to the show. We know that there aren't thousands of you yet, but it seems like people are liking what we're up to. And we appreciate that. And we want to bring more to you next year. So everybody have a fun holiday and a great New Year, and we're going to see you in 2019. Well, I guess we won't see you, right?
No, we don't have viewers.
we'll hear you. No, we won't even hear you.
No,
you'll hear us.
You will hear us again in 2019.
You can count on it. And we'll, of course, do a special, of course, Singing in the Rain, To Kill a Mockingbird, double feature show when Teal has seen these movies.
Yes.
But see, this is what's so great is that you're going to have that same experience as I did when I saw Yojimbo.
Exactly.
I can't believe I've gone this long without seeing such a miraculous movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Okay.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.